You've just landed inside Launch Street, the innovation podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate and differentiate and get further faster in this crazy cluttered world. And now, innovation thought leader and your super fly host, Tamara Kleinberg.
Very excited for today's interview, as I always am, because we bring you these amazing people. So today, I have Felina Hansen with me. She is a longtime entrepreneur and marketing maven and author of Flight Club, Rebel, Reinvent, and Thrive, How to Launch Your Dream Business. Her latest venture, Hera Hub, is a spa-inspired shared workspace and community for female entrepreneurs. Hera Hub members have access to a professional space to meet with clients and to connect and collaborate with like-minded business owners, thus giving them the support they need to be prosperous. So I'm very excited to dig in. Felina, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
So let's start with your journey. How did you go from, you know, the start to founding Hera Hub?
Sure. So I spent my 20s working in mostly technology startups and faced an interesting situation over those years, in so that two of the companies I worked for sold and one ran out of money, which is, par for the course in the world of tech. And so I found myself being laid off three times by the age of 30.
Wow.
Yeah. Fun, right? Like, yeah. What a successful start to my career. Yes, exciting. Terribly. Yeah, setting the world on fire. So I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family, actually, as part of the subtitle of my book, as you mentioned, Rebel. I grew up in quite a rebellious family. Both parents are entrepreneurs. Neither played by the rules. They all kind of beat to their own drum, if you will. So when I decided to branch out on my own at age 30, it was kind of like, gosh darn it, what took you so long? Anyhow, so my first business, well, actually, I'll go back a tiny bit. So I was married in my 20s and helped my now ex-husband launch several companies in the surf industry, surfboard manufacturing, surf apparel, documentary filmmaking around surfing. And learned a ton, spent a ton of money launching those businesses, all to have them fail, as did my marriage. So that was all around age 30, all came together at the same time. So, it was like, let me just reset this a little bit. So I launched a marketing strategy consulting business. I think a lot of women I see do this, where they'll take their first step in entrepreneurship in more of a service-based type company, and that's what I did for 8 years. I had a company called Perspective Marketing and worked out of my home because it was cost-effective and convenient. And I, over the years, found it to be isolating, sometimes hard to focus, hard to be productive. And I really missed having colleagues, so to speak. I had subcontractors in my business for certain projects I'd work on, but I didn't have any employees, or I didn't have a team, so to speak. So all that to say, I actually hosted an event. I was running a couple professional women's groups, just kind of fell into that, one called Ladies Who Launch, as in launch businesses.
Oh, I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, I ran the San Diego community for several years and worked with several hundred women and helping them launch their business. I taught college part-time. I was, doing a number of things and hosted an event at a co-working space in 2010, early 2010, and just was like, kind of taken back by the environment. It was so different, all these independent people working together, very different than a kind of staunchy old school executive suite where, nobody talks to each other. Everybody goes into their own little rooms. And how is that different than working out of my spare bedroom, right?
Right.
I don't need Janie, the receptionist, pretending to be my admin. So anyways, I started researching co-working spaces in 2010. And it was sort of the high, kind of taking off at that point. Obviously, shared space, again, has been around for a long time. But in this form, this very open, collaborative, community-based environment, it was kind of new. And what I found, as you can probably understand is a lot of them were kind of geared towards technologists and I mean, I'll just be blunt, like 22, 24-year-old dudes, you know,
wearing sweatshirts and hoodies,
exactly, and, you know, ping pong table and beer keg, and, you know, like super cool, but like not my tribe. So long story short, I researched the market and I found a segment of the market that was being ignored in this world of co-working. So launched the first space officially. It'll be 6 years this August, so almost 6 years old, and have been growing from there.
So I want to back up a little bit because you said a few things I want to dig into. And I know we both laughed a little bit about being laid off three times and, you know, being involved in all these things that were failures for one reason or another. But I have to imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, that having those experiences relatively early on in our long lives actually made, I don't want to say made failure easier, but made you able to get through it or more accepting of it or not as scared of it. Did it do that? Oh, totally.
Yeah, I got lucky in so many regards as it relates to that. You know, the layoff certainly was a big one. You know, going through a divorce at the same time, another big one. But even before that, a year after college, and this was a big life changer for me as well, and gives me definitely, I'm going to say, pretty strong drive, is I got hit by a fire truck at age 22.
And oh my God, I read that about you.
27 bones in my arms, legs, and face. Yeah. And, you know, it seems crazy that I can even, like, speak about that in a you know, like, whatever tone. But, you know, truly, truly believe what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And that experience at a really early age just gave me that opportunity to look at life in a different perspective. And so, yeah, as an entrepreneur and as somebody who's taken a lot of risk in opening, you know, three locations in the first 2 years of business, putting all my cards on the table, all my money, so to speak, into this business, and then expanding now internationally through a licensing model, I do get people that are like, wow, you're really going for it. And I'm like, well, why not? We only live once, right?
Well, and I think, you know, you learn through failure. I know I certainly have, that it's actually not the end. So if something doesn't work, it really isn't the end. It's just a lesson. And then you pivot and adjust and you move in the right direction. Why women entrepreneurs for Hera Hub? I mean, I know you said it was an underserved market. Obviously, you've got your experience. Is that the reason to focus there?
Yeah. So a couple reasons. Yes. I mean, my experience in supporting female entrepreneurs is a big part of it. But I wanted to create a workspace that was different. The environment is quite different than many other spaces. We call it spa-inspired space. There's running water and candles and nice music, and it smells great, and there's fresh flowers. I mean, you know, by all means, there are some men that are attracted to that environment as well. And we're not, while we are female-focused, we're not exclusive to women. We do have a handful of male members that enjoy that environment. But I also wanted to create my background in education, again, teaching college entrepreneurship and marketing for 8 years on the side while I ran my prior business. I love educating. I love, you know, getting people together and sharing ideas and, you know, really building that community. And so we've infused so much of that into Hera Hub. There are daily mentors, there are weekly workshops, there are full-fledged business accelerator programs that we're getting funding from both local city agencies as well as the Small Business Administration. We have a female angel investing arm where we're teaching women how to become angel investors. There is just so much going on under the umbrella, so to speak, of the Hera family. And that's what I wanted to create and have created, is something that's not just space, because anybody can throw up four walls and put some desks in and call it a co-working space, but a true community where women truly support each other. Tamara, I'm sure that you perhaps have heard this from other folks. You know, it breaks my heart when I hear women in corporate talk about how they wouldn't want to work for a woman because, you know, they haven't had the support that they would want from other women in their company. And that just, I mean, we have to annihilate that. I mean, that has to be, women need to support other women in every way, shape, and form. And that's how we're going to change the world, frankly.
Do you think that's an issue of stereotype or an issue of conditioning? Because I do know what you're talking about. And I am 100% with you. And I do everything I can to support aspiring female entrepreneurs, any chance I can get, or innovators of any kind, intrapreneur, entrepreneur. But you do hear that a lot. So what is that about? Is it really just baggage that's not really happening, but we're conditioned to say it? Or are we really seeing that?
I think we are really seeing it. I mean, at least at the women that I speak with, I think it comes from just an old mindset, a competitive mindset. I mean, we see it in politics. We see it in corporate. It's a scarcity model when you think about it. There's not enough to go around, so I have to fight for my own corner, so to speak. And I've heard women say about other women that, you know, they felt like they were getting kicked down the ladder, so to speak, because the woman ahead of them said, you know, I had to get here the hard way. You're going to have to do the same type of thing, which is just ridiculous. And so I built an environment where there is no ladder. We're all in it together. Somebody doesn't become a member of Hera Hub unless they believe in collaboration, unless they're there to support other women, period. Otherwise, they just don't join. So it's nice being an entrepreneur because we can choose our own destiny. We can choose when we work, how we work, with whom we work with. So, it creates a unique environment to do just that and to model that back into corporate as well, hopefully.
So let's talk a little bit about the flip side. I've found in my work, and I'd love to hear your perspective, that women tend to actually be more collaborative than men. How can we actually use that to our advantage?
Oh, yeah, 1,000%. I would agree with that statement. In so many ways. I mean, we're stronger together. Launching a business is hard. It's so
difficult. Yes,
it is. And doing it in isolation in your spare bedroom is almost impossible. I mean, and women
are... It takes all the fun out of it.
It does. And women are sadly very good at questioning themselves and not, you know, taking some of the confidence that they should have forward into their business. And so being around folks that are going through the same thing, that can share their experience with you, a like-minded community is just critical in launching a business. So yes, women are naturally collaborative. We're naturally, you know, connectors, tribe builders, if you will. I mean, take us back to the, you know, whatever origins of time you wanna speak to. You know, we were the connective tissue, so to speak, and that still stands today.
You know, you hinted at it a little bit with the, kind of not taking risks and maybe not owning our wonderful confidence. What are some of the other myths or hurdles that you think women need to overcome to pursue their entrepreneurial dreams?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that in and of itself is one of the biggest things that women I see sometimes we're our own worst enemies. We just are not, we're not as confident as we should be, and we're good at we're very good at, you know, making sure everybody else is taken care of in our lives. Oftentimes putting ourselves last. We're people pleasers. I talk about this a lot in some of the talks I do, this internal versus external locus of control. And men are more known to have an internal locus of control, and women are more known to have an external locus of control, meaning we oftentimes are taking that input from other people more so than we are letting our, you know, internal ideas and thoughts and confidence shine, so to speak. And so just being able to be in an environment where women can be open and have those conversations with each other and acknowledge that is really important.
I'm curious. I first of all, I totally agree with what you're saying. And it is interesting to see where, on one hand, I feel like as women, we're really good problem solvers. We do it every day, particularly, I'd say, moms. Some of the invention ideas I see from moms are absolutely incredible, just incredible. And not just geared around kids, but just I think their mindset is, you know, solving problems every single day. And multitasking, you know, not in the sense of like truly doing 10 things at once, but having 10 things to do in an hour to do it all.
Yeah.
So it is so interesting to see, and I'm curious from the women that go into Hera Hub, which sounds like such an awesome place, if you have any case studies or examples you can share of women businesses, because I have to imagine that for some of them, being there has made all the difference.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we see it every day from, you know, a female lawyer who's launching her own business as solo practice than being able to step into collaboration. I just saw it yesterday. I have a veteran trial attorney in my community, Melody Kramer, company's called Greenhouse Law, and she is just stepping into a collaboration with another member of ours who has a background in political advocacy. She's a scientist, and they are passionate about, you know, really looking at how can we change the, you know, future of, you know, bipartisan politics in the United States.
Wow.
and actually have, yeah, I know, just those little things, you know,
tiny,
small, you know, we'll get that done tomorrow. Yeah. But, you know, somebody with these two different, you know, diverse backgrounds, and passions around opening up conversations, their first focus is going into companies and helping employees within companies have some of these dialogues in a bipartisan fashion, you know, and really just tackle some of the issues that are happening out there. They would have never built this concept, you know, by themselves, each, you know, in their own right, but bringing them together, it was just magic for me to see. They pitch, we do a thing called the think tank, and they pitched at our think tank yesterday at our member lunch, and it was like, I mean, that's what makes my heart sing, is when I see two awesome women come together, create something new, help each other. It happens daily at Hera Hub. It's just amazing.
I think there's got to be something in the fact that you've got this, you know, invisible glue that holds everybody together, in terms of they're all kind of coming from the same, maybe not from the same place, wrong way to say it, but, you know, with the same kind of passion in mind, yet with very different perspectives and backgrounds. And then you're putting them in one place together to collaborate.
Exactly.
It's very cool. So one of the things that you said that I wanted to ask about is, you said that, you know, you think women-owned businesses are the key to the next wave of U.S. prosperity. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So I think, again, women inherently approach different, you know, kind of a different perspective in approaching business, one more that's more collaborative. And also women tend to hire women as well. I mean, they're just more conscious about diversity in a lot of cases. And so, you know, you look at the stats, and some research is saying that women are starting businesses at twice the rate as men, and noting that sometimes those businesses are perhaps not the next Airbnb or, you know, highly scalable businesses, but they're businesses that are supporting their communities. Women are hiring other women. And again, this idea of approaching business from a very collaborative, supportive, nurturing, you know, environment and setting, I think will have a ripple effect into how others do business. And look at social entrepreneurship, so to speak, this kind of hybrid between, you know, for-profit and nonprofit and companies that are doing good. That's a mantra that most women go into business with. And so, again, I think that's going to just change the tone of how we do business across the board.
So that's interesting. So if I hear you right, you're saying that women-owned businesses tend to be more socially minded out of the gate.
Absolutely.
Versus something they have to work into because it's a good marketing idea.
Yeah, because most women are starting businesses because they see a need and they want to help other people. You know, I mean, yes, making a profit is important, but most of the time they're looking at what the opportunity is and how can they help others. And then we, you know, kind of help them find the profitability within that. So I will say the opposite side of the coin. I meet some women who are so focused on that they kind of forget the profit part of it. And that's what we do a lot of education on and a lot of mentoring and coaching on at Hera Hub, is this is a great idea, but let's run the numbers and, you know, how can we make sure this is sustainable? So, yeah.
That's the lesson you get over time with business, isn't it? Someone said to me once, and this is a quote attributed to some ancient philosopher, I don't know who, but they said this to me and this changed my view about that, because I used to, not that I'm not passion driven now, but that used to be the only driver versus one of the drivers. And they said to me, yes, Tamara, but it takes profit to make change. I was like, oh, and that was when I really realized that I needed money to still be in business to make the change I wanted to make down the road.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because with that, I mean, you know, I look at my business. I have an amazing team of six awesome women, and I'm able to provide them an opportunity for, you know, an income, but also, you know, to learn and grow as we grow. And then the ripple effect into our members and other things. I mean, that's why I get the question all the time, are you a nonprofit organization? And while we do have two separate entities that are nonprofits, the core of Hera Hub is it's a for-profit company. And so that if I'm teaching women how to launch a profitable business, shouldn't I be running a profitable business as well?
Right. Right. Yeah. You know what? That's an excellent point. I hadn't really thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. Shouldn't I model what I'm teaching
yes.
them to do?
Exactly. Instead of asking for handouts all of the time, you know, grants and things of that nature, there's so many well-deserving organizations and people out there. You know, I'd rather teach somebody what I've learned than, you know, try to model something else.
You know, it's interesting. I last week got a call from a women's group asking me to speak, and but they don't pay. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, well, what's the theme of the conference? And they said, it's success, achieving your goals. And I thought, well, that's great, but help me. So I asked them, I said, help me understand if that's what you're teaching them, why, how come I should be donating my services as a woman-owned business? I mean, isn't that contradictory to what you're, the point of the conference? So nonetheless to say, I will not be working for them. And yeah. it's probably not the right fit, but it, I feel like they need to come talk to you on what you just said, because I really do think that the modeling part of it is something that I think we as innovators and women innovators in particular need to remember, that this is about building a sustainable business so that you can do what you love to do in the way that you want to do it, but you have to keep doing it.
Exactly.
So what do you mean when you say lean out, and why do women need to do it? I love that. I'm so curious because, you know, all the rage around lean in. So
mm-hmm. yeah,
I'd love to hear lean out.
Obviously, I'm playing off of that. So as many may know in the book, Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, you know, kind of the gist of the conversation is, you know, just dig in, you know, lean into the table, get involved in your company. You know, she's very much talking about an employee role in that book, so to speak. And so playing off of that, I'm encouraging women to lean out of their corporate environment, their J-O-B, as I like to say, and launch their own business, launch their own dreams, you know, take something that they're interested in, that they're passionate about and can be profitable, and, you know, pave their own path, so to speak.
You know, it's when I saw this question and something for us to talk about, I was like, ooh, excellent. Because I love her work, Sheryl Sandberg's work. I really do. And I love Lean In. However, what I'm seeing, and I think what you're referring to, is a lot of women who are saying, wait a minute, why am I going to spend 20 years on an uphill battle with a company that's going to be slow to change when I could just go do my own thing? And yeah. I have an idea and I can go do it. And I really appreciate that, because I think we have to take into account, to your point, all the women that are now starting businesses, whether, you know, big or small, whether it's a tiny little product service business or, you know, the next Airbnb, who knows what's mm-hmm. coming. It's all out there somewhere in the universe, which is so cool. What is your advice for women inside organizations? So all these, you know, we have a lot of intrapreneurs, so these entrepreneurial-minded people, but they're inside organizations and they like it. It's not a, you know, they're not necessarily wishing to leave, but they're entrepreneurial-minded and want to bring that to their work. So what's your advice for them?
Yeah, twofold. I mean, number one, there are a lot of companies out there that, yeah, you hear about this like 10% time, right? I mean, I spoke at Intuit recently to their women's network and had this conversation. They have 10% time, supposedly, that they give their employees to innovate. Everybody like chuckled when I said that.
Right.
But so, you know, can you innovate within the company? Can you, and ask? I mean, there goes Lean In, right? Like ask about, you know, bringing some of your ideas to market for the company, within the company. I'm actually talking to Illumina, one of San Diego's supposed smartest companies, biotech firms here, and with that same message is, what can you do under the umbrella of this company? And just ask for permission, or just do it, frankly, I mean, in my book, but, you know, ask for the opportunities that you see there. And then the other thing is, if you don't get the support that you need from that company to do that, I know, you know, we're moms and we're busy and there's a lot going on, but, you know, can you start a side business? Can you start consulting on the side or doing something on the side that can build that fulfillment and potentially build into something that you could lean out eventually and do full time.
You know, it's the whole permission thing is such a backhanded thing, isn't it? Because on one hand, it's important. You got to get buy-in from people, particularly people, your leadership or people who have to take your idea down the road and implement it. The flip side is it's usually the first place we get shut down when trying to do something maybe a little more bold or a little more innovative. And I always talk to people about, you know, get that duct tape and that scented marker out and bring it to life just one step. Find one little corner in your office where you can prove the viability of your idea. Not, you know, roll it out completely, not engage it across all the stores. Literally give me a hint of proof, because when, as someone who's been on the other side of that table, when you come to me with a hint of proof, I'm way more willing to say yes than I am on an idea that looks totally insane on paper.
True. Yep. Really great point.
So how can someone make the transition from fear to future? I feel like you've done that really well.
Yeah. You know, it's a tough question to answer because it's going to be different for everybody. But, you know, it starts with believing in yourself and just having that confidence that you can do it. And surrounding yourself with the right people, I think, is the critical piece. Don't try to do it on your own. You know, build community, find a co-working space in your city, or if nothing exists, then build a Hera Hub in your city. You know, I mean, find the support and resources that you need. Don't try to, you know, go at this solo.
Something you said sparked a question that's going to take us back a little bit in the conversation.
Sure.
But when you started Hera Hub, and as you've transitioned to being really a very successful business with multiple locations and, you know, more coming your way, what do you think some of the big lessons you've had along the way that we as, you know, aspiring entrepreneurs on the front end of our journey should pay attention for?
Yeah, I mean, so part of this I built into the book in the Steps to Startup platform that I put together, which is an online tool that folks can use to go kind of step by step through the business launch process, so to speak. But a few of the tips that I like to talk about with women, especially the concept of work-life balance always comes up in almost any time I'm talking to somebody, doing an interview, sitting on a panel. And what I like to encourage women to think about is work-life integration. How can you bring what you love to do, your business, everything you're passionate about in, and bring your family along for the ride? Get your kids involved, right? I mean, don't try to compartmentalize things. And I think women especially, we do tend to blend everything together. Be careful of the imposter syndrome.
And what's,
I think,
that?
Sheryl Sandberg talks about this, I think, a little bit in her book, but, and a lot of other folks have, feeling like a fraud, basically. So many women, and even, you know, Maya Angelou and Tina Fey and some of these really well-known women have talked about, you know, they feel like a fraud. Somebody's going to find me out, type of thing. And it sounds crazy to even say that, but I talk to so many women who have that feeling of, you know, that they're acting like somebody that they're not. And I don't know that as many men have that that challenge, so to speak. And a couple others, instinct, trust your instinct. Women have tremendous instinct, and oftentimes we try to suppress that and ignore it. And that really is doing ourselves a disservice. And then last but not least, keep doubters at bay, I like to say. You know, when you have a business idea, you know, you may tell your uncle or your cousin or your, you know, husband or wife or whatever, you know, your neighbor. And a lot of times people have their own fears, and they'll say something like, wow, you know, I don't know, that sounds risky. You know, maybe you should just keep your day job, you know, those types of things. And that can kind of squash an entrepreneur, a wantrepreneur in the early stages. So, you know, I always like to say, you know, thank you for your advice. I appreciate your input, but try not to take that too personally, because people are going to, you know, project their own fears onto you in sharing some of these ideas.
Isn't that amazing how that happened? I just had that happen to me yesterday, so if I sound a little speechless, it just brought me back to this memory of sharing with someone something that we're about to launch and kind of go to the next level with. And they were like, are you sure you want to do that? It sounds a little too big. And I thought, oh, well, what? God. Who are you? Are you kidding me? But I had that moment of, oh my God, they're right. And then I realized kind of what you're saying. It is amazing other people's mediocre baggage and how they like to place that on you when you're going for something big. And I think just to kind of bring that back to Hera Hub, I think that's why supportive environments are so important, because you have a, for lack of a better term, a safe haven to go to where people are truly trying to push you up and help lift you versus kind of keep you at their level with their baggage.
Exactly. Yep. You said it perfectly.
So how do you find a tribe to support you towards success? Is it about getting to a Hera Hub? Is it, how do you weed out the one that should be in your tribe?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think as women, going back to that instinct, we kind of inherently know. I mean, you know, when you walk into an event and you meet some folks, you kind of have a sense of, you know, are these people, you know, do they think like me? Are they like-minded? And again, I want to pose the opposite of that, which is sometimes it's good to surround yourself also with people that think differently, of course. You know, we don't want to all think the same, that can challenge you. And so with that, finding folks that are going to help you grow, right? Maybe they're one step ahead of you in their business. I mean, that's why I think environments like Hera Hub work, is we've got women from, you know, hey, I have an idea, to women who have been in business 20 years and are selling their business and going on to the next thing. And so that exchange of information from members who were 22 to 71 years old is really, really important.
You started talking a little bit about mindset in there. So I want to dig into that a little bit, because I think oftentimes with entrepreneurship and with, you know, going after something and tackling that every single day, a lot of that is about mindset. So how do you get someone to transition from that more, what's the word I'm looking for? I've got it in my head. Oh, shoot. And now I lost it. This is the problem with interviews where like you get so digging, because I'm like, she said it and then I lost it. Darn it.
Yeah.
It was right there. Here it is. Okay. It came back. How do they shift their mindset from, you know, that more kind of keeping close, playing it safe, to being ready to take the leap? Because isn't a lot of that mindset at the end of the day?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable as an entrepreneur. And I think for a lot of us who have been through a lot of career change, you know, maybe been laid off once or several times, I think that's a good primer for being an entrepreneur, to be honest, because there are no guarantees out there. You know, a job is not secure anymore at all. Gone are the days where somebody works for a company for 40 years, gets a pension and retires. So, you know, the world we live in is already pushing us towards that. I mean, right now, 33% of the knowledge-based workforce is independent. Some are saying that'll be 50, even 60% by 2020. Because companies are changing so quickly, the environment's changing so quickly. So, you know, I tell people, you know, learn how to become an entrepreneur and you will never be unemployed, right? You'll always be able to, you know, put food on the table. You'll always be able to think differently. You know, having a learning environment, being very open to learning new things all the time, is so critical, just in the world we live in general, but especially as an entrepreneur. So having that learning mindset is really, really important. And being very focused on some of the things and getting curious about profitability and numbers and some of those things that sometimes we tend to ignore as entrepreneurs. Just be seeking that information and find mentors that can help you in some of those areas that maybe you don't have as much experience in.
I love that. I call them my success team.
Yes.
And I found three people who could help me. They've built businesses to the level I'm trying to build mine. They are, one is got the kind of opposite skill that I do. And, you know, I really tap them to help me be successful, because I don't have all the information, all the knowledge and all the ideas on my own. I recognize that. And I need other people to bounce ideas off of, who are not, you know, stuck at my desk every day looking at the information the way I'm looking at it. And, you know, you said something that I think is really important just to pause, which is, you know, if you are an entrepreneur, you're going to have work for the rest of your life. You're not going to starve. And I didn't kind of articulate as well as you did, but I love that idea. And I think part of the reason is when you're an entrepreneur, you control your own destiny and you look for the opportunities to go after and you're constantly seeking the next thing, which I think is really empowering. And I think also if you take that entrepreneurial mindset and you're part of a team, you're the one bringing those innovative ideas and solutions to the table. You're not just doing your job. And, you know, when I look at organizations, and we're talking about the shift in kind of how we're hiring and who we're hiring, it's people who are being hired, and the ones who always have work are the ones who are innovative in how they approach things. It's not about a specific skill or doing your job. It's about being able to solve those big problems and go after those big opportunities.
Exactly. Yeah, that's put very, very well.
Thank you. What is servant leadership, and how does that lens change your style for the better?
Yeah, I got involved in a servant leadership program right when I first started my, I guess, second business, if you will, Perspective Marketing in 2003. I went through a year-long training course. And what I found through that is women are actually natural servant leaders. we tend to really think about the collective, so to speak, and making a decision. How will this, decision affect not only myself, but my team and my community? And so servant leadership is not it's not foreign to women, frankly. I think most women actually model that, but I think it is sometimes a new premise in some of the more traditional business cultures, if you will, of putting your team first. I always describe our, organizational chart at Hera Hub as I'm on the bottom. It's an inverse triangle, and I'm on the bottom because my job is to do everything I can to support my amazing team, who then in turn can support our incredible members, and then in turn extend that into sharing what we've learned over the last 6 years with women across the country and now across the globe in how to take this premise of the Hera Hub platform and build it for their communities, so our licensees, who then in turn can empower women in their own communities. So this idea of servant leadership has been around a long time, long, long, long time. But it has become, I think, more popular now again, as this rise of social entrepreneurship has really gotten more notice, so to speak, in the entrepreneurial world.
I love the idea of just flip the triangle upside down. So, Felina, this has been great. Where can people find you?
Yeah, so herahub.com, Hera or Hera, if you're in Greece, being the Greek goddess of women. And then also the book is at flightclubbook.com, and it's available on Amazon.
Awesome. One last question is, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you? It could be hobby, experience, passion.
Yeah. So, I incite pop-up nightclubs, in random places with some girlfriends of mine here in San Diego, usually on the street or sometimes in Chase ATMs. And we bring a rock and stereo system and try to get as many people who are passing by to dance with us as possible. And we've had up to like 300 people one night dancing with us.
Where was that?
Downtown San Diego.
Oh my gosh. I love the idea of it. So all I need is like a 1980s boombox.
Well, something a little bit. We have a Fender stereo system.
And you're a little more sophisticated than that.
My Spotify playlist. And because, you got to like draw people in, right? And so, yeah, it's just so fun. I mean, this last one we did here in San Diego a couple months ago, it was like a family-friendly kind of thing. So we were playing, family-friendly music, so to speak. I had so many little kids come dance with us. It was, they were just like, they were so excited. They're like, oh my gosh, this is great.
I was laughing the other day. I was at a wedding and all the kids, the minute the music started, jumped on the dance floor and the adults took about 20 minutes to roll in. I'm like, what is wrong with us adults? Like, why aren't we just
Seriously?
Letting loose? Come on.
Yeah, exactly. We need to go back to that childlike state.
Now, do you post on Twitter or anywhere else where you're going to be, or is it totally just here we are?
I have a private, or I guess a secret group on Facebook that we have. sometimes we're taking over businesses that we probably shouldn't. And so I don't want to necessarily...
You don't want to ask for permission.
Alert the world. See? Yes, exactly. So a little sneaky, but maybe as Hera Hub grows, we'll do pop-up nightclubs across the U.S. and the globe.
Well, I look forward to being in San Diego. Actually, I'll be in San Diego in October, so I will walk the streets.
All right.
Looking All right. for the pop-up nightclub.
Yes, indeed.
Felina, thank you so much. This has been very insightful.
My pleasure.
Thanks for hanging out with us inside Launch Street. When you're ready to take your game to the next level, join the thousands of others that are upping their innovation edge on GoToLaunchStreet.com, the top online education resource and community platform for innovators looking to use innovation to get measurable results. GoToLaunchStreet.com.